Okay, now let's see and discuss the homework. The homework is, it's a very simple homework. Well, although it's probably the longest of the three that we'll be supposed to do, in which you're supposed to do a Monte Carlo simulation, a real Monte Carlo simulation of a fluid system. The interaction between the particles is a simple Lennard-Jones potential with an additional attractive interaction which decays exponentially. The parameters are specified here, where you're given the temperature and the density. Of course, you will have to fix also the number of particles. In most of the simulation, you should take 60 particles. And so if you use the density and the number of particles, you will be able to compute the size of the system as in terms of the scale sigma. Remember to use adimensional units, which in practice means that you can set epsilon and sigma equal to 1. This is the quantity that you should fix in your simulation, and then you recover them at the end when you have to use physical units. The potential is written in top. Of course, in the simulation, you should use a shifted and truncated potential. And in most of the simulation, the cutoff will be half of the box size, but you will do also some simulations in which the cutoff is less than half of the box size. The update is done using the standard Metropolis. And here, for convenience, I've also written how to generate the new position of the particle so that it's clear what delta is. So let's see the different points in the simulation. The first set of simulations is meant to study how the errors depend on delta. So the idea is of repeating the same simulation several times with different values of delta, and for each value of delta, see and check what are the errors. In practice, we want to compute the autocorrelation time and compare the autocorrelation time in equilibrium for the different values of delta. There is one important point here. This is the first simulation that you should do, and it is a good point, a good place to perform a check of the correctness of the code. So it's important to realize that delta is not a physical parameter, it's a parameter on the simulation, and so the results should be independent of delta, of course, within error bars. So what should come out of the simulation, you will do five different simulations depending on the value of delta, so you will have five different estimates of energies and pressures. All these numbers should coincide within errors. When we say within errors, means typically that you expect these numbers to agree with a difference which is at most the sum of the two error bars. But of course, remember that one sigma means only 66%, 2/3 probability. So it is possible that one of the five results will be not in this interval, will be slightly outside it. Okay, this is nothing wrong, there is nothing wrong with that. But of course, if you see that the two numbers differ by 6, 7, 8 error bars, there is something wrong. There is something wrong either with the simulation or with your computation of the errors. So a good check here is to verify immediately, once you've done the simulation for the two different values of delta, to verify that the two numbers agree one with the other. When you do the debugging of the code, remember that there is no need to do 10,000 iterations. It's probably enough that you do 1,000 so that the simulation is very fast. Do a very short simulation, do a first error analysis, verify that the numbers more or less agree within errors, and then only at that point do the full simulation with 10,000 iterations. The purpose of the simulation is to, as I said, to verify how the errors depend on delta, and in a sense also to understand if the rule of thumb that I mentioned during the lessons is correct. As I said, Usually, one takes delta so that the average acceptance is of the order of 30%, 50%. So we expect, according to this rule of thumb, that the best delta, the delta which gives you the best errors, corresponds to an acceptance in this interval. Or at least, if you choose a delta in this interval, you get something which is more or less optimal. So this is something that you should check, verify, and see if this is true. And once you've done that, in the simulations at point B, C, D, use a value of delta which corresponds to the smallest possible error. So you choose one of those five different values so that you get the best errors. So you get the most precise results for energy and pressure. Remember to apply the tail correction, which is not needed here to do this analysis of the errors. Of course, the tail correction does not have any influence on the errors, but it will be needed when we do a comparison at point B. So the comparison of point B is meant to make you realize how the cutoff influences your results. Influences your results without and with the tail correction. The main result that you should observe is that without tail correction, results strongly depend on the cutoff. Also because here, cutoffs are very small. The box size is probably just of the order of 5 sigmas, so that L over 2 is quite a small number. So a cutoff L over 8 is of order sigma, which is really tiny. And so if you take a cutoff of order sigma, you will get something completely different. Some of the differences will be taken into account by the tail correction. If you compare the results using the tail correction, differences will become smaller. Then the simulations at point C are meant to understand what is the role of the number of particles. 60 particles is really a small number. So you can do a simulation with 100 particles and 200 particles. Of course, they will be more expensive, you will need more time. And so do the simulations at point C only when you are sure that your code is correct. Then you will get new estimates, use the tail correction and compare. So the purpose is to understand if the simulation with 60 particles, 100 particles are already asymptotic. They are asymptotic if numbers are more or less constant. In this way we say, okay, even with 100 particles, we have numbers which appear to be asymptotic, which means we have already obtained results that are valid for an infinite volume system. So for a system in which the number of particles is of the order of the Avogadro number, which looks a little bit unexpected, but in most of the cases, it works this way. Here, in this last point C, you should also compute the G of R, the pair distribution function. And remember to plot the pair distribution function as a function of R over sigma, not as a function of the bin, of the number of bin that you have used to compute it. As a function of R over sigma, you should find something which is more or less an independent. So it should not depend on the number of particles that you have considered. So you should look at the pair distribution function using the algorithm I have discussed today and compare it for two different number of particles. The last point is trivial. Just take the result of point C for the adimensional pressure, for the adimensional energy, and just introduce units. This is just to get a feeling that this simulation provides also physical results, that you can translate the results that you obtain in the Monte Carlo simulation with real numbers, with physical units, so pressure in Pascal and temperature in Kelvin and densities in mole divided by centimeters cubed. This is not an international unit, but it is the unit which is commonly used to express molar densities. Because remember that we use number densities in the simulations and in the whole theory, but here we are asking for a molar density, So for the density of a mole, so you should be careful to translate numbers in moles using the Avogadro number. Then I wrote some technical details just to remind you how to compute distances using the minimum image convention. I reported here the virial definition for the pressure, tail corrections, and if you have questions and you need explanations, I've organized, as in the last homework, three different meetings where you can ask questions and explanations.